Rachel Finiak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, my guest is Becky Morrison. She is founder of boutique production firm The Light. We are going to talk about live action production and how it might change in the post-pandemic world. If we see a post-pandemic world, I'm starting to lose faith. But hi, Becky. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Paige.
Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
All right. So to kick us off, why don't you tell us about The Light and what it does? And I know The Light, or I looked up that The Light is in Brooklyn. So that must be a thing. So maybe talk about that a little bit, too.
Sure. Yeah. You may even hear over the course of our conversation some ambulance sirens in the background. Yeah. So, yes, that's right. I'm here in Brooklyn. The Light is based here in New York. And we are a production company that specializes in commercials and promos. And we're also very passionate about production innovation, as well as inclusion and sustainability and equity.
Just to follow on that. So production innovation to you looks like what?
Production innovation is really a term that I coined to describe my outlook on production. And really what it is taking a look at the existing structures and questioning them and investigating where they in fact came from in the first place and whether they're a fit for the way that we do business today and especially for the future.
We're going to get into that. That's going to be the meat of our conversation in a bit. One thing that we know that I've talked a fair amount about with people is that live action essentially has come to a halt in light of the pandemic. And for some agencies, especially ones that specialize in motion graphics, animation, I feel like they've had an easier time adjusting. For The Light, how much of your emphasis is on live action? And so what has this time meant for you?
Yeah, our emphasis has been solely on live action up until now. And so we've been using this time really to reimagine what production looks like after this, as well as what might creative development look like after this for us. So we've been using, and that's something that we've been thinking about for years anyway, and it's really been a chance for us to dive deeper into, you know, upgrading our processes. And we've also been using the time to host virtual workshops. We've done several of those where we've brought industry experts on and had conversations that we've opened to the public. Our first one was about the difference between grips and electrics. Our second one was about filming on the iPhone at home. And those are really in the spirit of democratizing knowledge, which is something that we care about all the time anyway. And so we're using this time to bring that more into the virtual space.
Okay, so two questions on that. One, where could people who are interested find those virtual workshops?
They're all on our website, on thelight.nyc. There's a webinars tab, they're all in there.
Okay, now my cynical question, which is, if your business is live action and producing live action commercials and promos, why would you want to do something so nice as to democratize that process?
That's a great question. It's really foundational to who we are. I mean, I think the goal of our company is really to change the way that production works overall industry-wide. So our goal isn't to make as much money as possible for ourselves. Our goal is to change production. That's really our driving principle when it comes to everything, when it comes to the way that we are on set, when it comes to these kinds of workshops. We have also started a podcast that talks about the history of Hollywood and using information about history to imagine the future. So that's really where we're coming from.
And is that podcast also findable on your website?
Yes. And on Apple Podcasts, it's called It's a Flashback. Not to promote our podcast on your podcast page.
That's what podcasts are for.
Appreciate it.
That is why we have podcasts. Can you tell me, pretend like I'm a person that has no idea how production works, which would really be actually an accurate representation of me, and explain to me what production looks. I mean, you don't have to go through the whole production, you know, the whole process of production, because that might take you several hours. But just what does traditional production look like right now?
Traditional, you mean the traditional production model in the way that you refer to it like that? Or like, how does it work from? Yes. Okay. Well, what we call the traditional production model is basically what has been used to make all content, all commercials, all features leading up until now. So the traditional production model is something that was created 100 years ago at the dawn of Hollywood, and it was created with certain priorities in mind. So when Hollywood first started, people were going crazy for movies, and the early Hollywood studios couldn't produce them fast enough. So really their priority at that time was efficiency. They wanted to churn out as many movies as possible, as fast as possible. And literally it almost didn't even matter what they were about. They just wanted to get them into the hands of consumers because motion pictures themselves were this technological marvel. Mm-hmm. So the way that they did that, the way that they were efficient in that process is that they broke filmmaking down into these steps. They de-skilled a lot of the labor, and they made it so that that labor could be very easily supervised and controlled. So if you think about that time, right? So this is like 1911. That's when Frederick, are you familiar with Frederick Winslow Taylor?
And his work? Of course not.
Okay. Well, so Frederick Winslow Taylor, and I wasn't familiar with him at all until about a year ago. But he published this work called about scientific management theory, which was really very seminal at the time and broke down that the best way to be efficient for a factory, for a company to be efficient, was to break down labor into these roles that could be supervised. So if you think about it, if you think about the factory, Henry Ford was very inspired by Frederick Winslow Taylor. And this was a real innovation at the time when it comes to organizational structures. And this was something that Hollywood used as well. Because if you think about it, we have this division of labor that we refer to as the line, right? Have you heard above the line and below the line?
Yes, absolutely. And please explain that so that I understand it for once and for all.
Yeah. So I was actually thinking about it yesterday. I was like, does the line have anything to do with the assembly line? But I don't actually think it does. I think the line refers to like a line number in a budget.
Yeah.
And
it's an accounting thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. An accounting thing. So when we talk about the line, those who are above the line really have a lot more autonomy. They are considered more difficult to replace, and their creative contribution is considered like of the utmost importance to a production.
So like whereas the director, the cinematographer, those kind of people.
Exactly, the talent.
Maybe the DP. Yeah, talent.
Yes.
Okay.
And those who are below the line are considered much more easily to replace. So those are people that would be like a grip or an electric or this kind of thing.
A gaffer. Right? And so, not that I know what that is, but yes.
Yeah, a gaffer, exactly. The gaffer is the main electric. Now you know what a gaffer is.
Okay. I know it for today. Anyway.
Exactly. So anyway, if you think about this early Hollywood process, they were using this innovation and organizational structure, and they were also designing this all within a specific context, which was that inside the studio system, all of the resources that they had, the props, the crew, all of that was all inside of the studio walls, and they were all on contract. So I say all that to say the production process that we have was designed very much with specific priorities in mind and within a specific context. Now, we have seen that other industries have modernized in the past 100 years, but really in a lot of ways, Hollywood, particularly the production side, has not. And while the equipment and the technology of filmmaking has, the way that we organize ourselves has not really innovated at all. And it's very much an old kind of structure, that hierarchical structure, and it's really steeped in paternalism and patriarchy, and that whole culture itself is something that may not be a fit for the times that we live in today. And that's really what we're talking about when I talk about production innovation, is examining that and challenging those structures and asking if they still work today. And it's very possible that some aspects of that may work and that we should keep them, but it's also possible that some of them are no longer a fit for today.
I mean, now that you explain it like that, I think, yes, okay, when I think about how something is produced, that is how I think about it. And, if you just watch TV right now, you see how production has been uprooted in a day. You know, like, you're seeing Nancy Pelosi call in from her kitchen in San Francisco. You're seeing, you know, and people are lit terribly, or they have like dorky earphones in their ears. But I mean, it's sort of been like the show must go on, however you get it done. So, but I also think a thing that I've talked about on this podcast before was some really interesting remote production, which is probably something you're going to talk about. But it is interesting how what this has forced many industries to do and will continue to force all of us to do is just accelerate things, is things that needed to change will now change. We can't keep messing around with it. Things are going to have to make a big difference. So let's talk a little bit about kind of sticking with that idea of traditional production. I know that then you looked into the Spanish flu of 1918, and that had some effects on the way things were produced. What did you see there, and how do you think it is going to apply to us going forward?
Well, I think one of the big lessons from the 1918 flu pandemic is really that Hollywood and movie making and content is robust, it's going to survive, and people want it. That's one major lesson that came from that. It's not going anywhere. No. And another one, really, if you look back at 1918, was that the pandemic changed forever distribution and exhibition. And what happened back then was really, so very similar to now, is that people couldn't go to movie theaters. So the movie theaters shut down. At that time, the theaters were owned by very mom and pop type of owners. So it was independent theaters, and they went into a lot of financial difficulties because of the shutdown. So what happened is that the studios came in and they bought up those independent movie theaters, which is something that they had been planning to do anyway. And they used the pandemic as an opportunity to really consolidate that. So that was the beginning of vertical integration, which is a term you may have heard.
Yes.
It was very.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, and what vertical integration is, for those of you who don't know, is when the studios owned production, distribution, and exhibition. And as a result of the 1918 flu pandemic, that's really when the studios started to own the exhibition side of things. And so I think that if we use that as a lesson that the pandemic changed distribution, exhibition, I think that's something that we very well may see today.
Well, aren't we seeing it, right? I mean, like this whole flap right now about Universal, I think, releasing Trolls World Tour, and AMC saying, well, we're not going to show Universal movies anymore. I mean, so you're seeing right now that split about playing out differently, but movies, you know, companies releasing them on streaming and theaters taking a line, and that whole structure, that whole distribution model is going to be upended by this.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I mean, look at the Oscar, the Academy just announced that a movie doesn't have to have theatrical distribution. And the Golden Globes had already done that. It's really upending all of that. And if there's no need for theatrical distribution for awards, which as we know are a huge economic driver, well, what does that mean for movie theaters in general?
Yeah. Yeah, that was actually on my list of questions. So we're going to slide over to that conversation for a minute, and then we'll come back to production. So as long as you feel comfortable, Becky, let's stay on this topic for a second, which I do think that, you know, because this idea of what counts as awards worthy or eligible, you know, last year with The Irishman and Marriage Story, and there's several other films that were distributed in theaters on a limited basis, but then on streaming. And it's been a big issue. It's been a big sticking point. You had even Steven Spielberg saying that he was opposed to it. But it does seem like, A, it's a trend that you can't, it's like a genie you can't put back in the bottle. And then B, the pandemic has come along and sort of forced the issue. So what do you think about that? And A, and B, what do you think the fate is of movie theaters in light of that?
Well, I think that movie theaters are going to have to innovate. I think that this is going to be a challenge to their traditional way of doing business, and they're going to be forced to innovate. Similar to when TV came on the scene, that's all of a sudden when, you know, movie theaters started doing 3D or Smell-O-Vision, or they were giving away
Smell-O-Vision.
Something to distinguish what the theatrical experience is that's distinct from the at-home experience, something that's going to get people out of their homes and into theaters. It has to be different. And I think that the way that theaters have been innovating over the past few years really has mirrored the at-home experience. So giving you comfortable seats or giving you food, which are both things that you can have in your house, So I think that there are going to be less theaters. And I think that the theaters that are that survive are going to need to innovate and really provide something distinct, whether that's immersive or whatever that is. It's going to need to be different.
Yeah, I agree. I will say, I put this in my notes even, that I do think that the going to the movie experience is still separate and distinct from that streaming a movie at home experience. Like, I still want to go and sit in a theater and pay, you know, $14 for my drink. Not really, but sort of. You know what I mean? Like, I still like that whole thing. So I hope that it, I mean, I don't want us to all enjoy movies alone going forward. I would, the communal experience is part of the movies.
I totally agree. I'm a cinephile. You know, I've loved movies since I was a little girl, and I'd watch a movie and the lights would go down, and it has a feeling that is unlike anything else. And I think that I agree. I don't think that movie theaters are going to go away, but I think they're going to need to step up their game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do think it's like you can go and get, you have a special Dolby sound, or you have IMAX, or you have 3D, and I have paid extra for 3D, and let me say, I ultimately am like, I don't think 3D is the answer. But I do think, I agree, though. I think there are innovations that can happen that will keep those things in business. All right. So let's get back into the heart of it, which is when you look at production innovation, when you consider the history that you have diven into, what do you think, looking forward, what do you think the changes are going to be to the traditional production model?
If you look at any piece of content that gets created, if we were going to distill it to the factors that are inherent in any situation, we really have money, quality, time, and the number of people on set. And I think that in the traditional sense, or what we've been doing up until now, is often the time that we have is limited. And so we need to have more people, which is why, let's say we have a one-day shoot, we have a lot of people there on set because there's a lot to get done in one day and we need all those people there to make it happen. So now I think in a post-pandemic landscape, when safety is going to be high priority. And I think that by safety in this sense, it really means that we can't have large groups of people gathering together. We're going to need to have smaller crews. And let's say that people are not going to want to sacrifice the quality at all. And let's say hypothetically that the amount of money stays around the same. Well, that what's going to need to happen is that we're going to need to have more time. So if you have, again, if you have less time, you have more people. If you have less people, you need more time. So I think one of the things that we're going to see is that a shoot that may have been one day is now going to be 2 days and have half the amount of people that are there. And I think that especially right after this, what we're also going to see is that that's going to need to come with a few caveats. Like we're going to need to lean into existing locations. So as opposed to doing a huge set dress or an upheaval of a location, leaning into a location the way that it is. And maybe if the creative calls for talent who are in everyday clothes, leaning into the talent's own wardrobe as opposed to having a wardrobe shop. These things that really bring the scale of our productions down a bit. And I think that while that pressure may be mounting because of the COVID situation, that is definitely a trend that has been mounting for years, like budgets getting smaller, more pressure being put on us as production to produce things. And I think that inside of that pressure cooker is where innovation needs to happen. So instead of just squeezing and squeezing and squeezing us, and we keep doing things the same way and it gets harder, asking ourselves the question like, okay, well, how can we just completely do this in a different way that gives us an experience of creativity and relief and actually positivity for people who are on set instead of people being squeezed and stressed out.
Can you explain if you have a, when you're saying like more people equals less time, what does that mean? Does that mean that you can have two units shooting simultaneously, or what does that accomplish for you to have many more people on a set at a time?
You mean like in, why do we typically have so many people on set?
Yes.
Or why
like
after
what?
This are we?
Yeah, because it seems like on to some level, like you can only accomplish one task at a time. So why does it help you to have that many more people around?
Well, that's a great question, Paige, and it's one I have thought about a lot. I really go down to this fundamental question, why do we have so many people on set? Well, why do we have them all there? And I think one of the reasons that I had mentioned, you know, is that there's this limited amount of time to get a lot done, and that takes more people. And then the other part of it is that goes back to what I was saying earlier about the way that this model was created, which is that the crew are very, the labor has been broken down into these very specific repeatable tasks and these departments, which are very siloed. So you have somebody who is an electric, they run cables to a light, right? That's a very specific task. You have someone who does sound, they do sound. You know, so the fact that we have this specialization of roles on set is also one of the reasons that we need so many people. Because the sound person isn't going to do makeup. Even though the sound person may not be working while the makeup is happening, right? Because they're not rolling sound when the talent's in the chair. But that same person doesn't have those skills because the labor is very specialized.
Sound to makeup is probably not the best example, because my guess is a sound guy is not going to be good at makeup. No offense to any sound guys who are good at makeup, but it does seem like so what you're saying though is people need to be able to bring more skills and talents to the job. But some of this is a guild problem, yes?
Yeah, and I would say for sure. I think some of the stuff I'm talking about innovation really currently exists in a non-union context because that's where it's possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that really fundamentally what I also want to speak to is that I no way have the answers or solutions. I really have ideas, and I encourage people to think about what might be ideas of how we can improve our production process. Because mm-hmm. I will say when you speak to this, like, or let's say hybrid roles, I just think so much about the next generation and their emphasis on fluidity. When I see these kids talking about gender or sexuality, identity, it is completely fluid. Like there are not these rigid roles in the same kind of way. And I think like these are the kids that are going to be entering the Hollywood workforce. And they're currently entering into a 100-year-old system that is has these calcified roles. And again, like I said, this very fraternal brotherhood culture, really, and a patriarchal culture, really, a process that was designed by white men for white men. And how is that going to merge with this generation who's coming up? And I think that the answer in a way is that this is part of the innovation conversation. We need to innovate production in a way that is going to be a match for those kids and use them as an inspiration to say, yeah, how can we be more fluid? How can we be more responsive? How can we be more adaptable? How can we scale up and scale down? Because that's not something that this current model is very good at all. It's very bloated and it's very rigid.
But flip that on its head. What if it goes the other way? This generation who's currently spending their time making TikTok videos and other sorts of, you know, one man band production, what if they are the ones that say, this is how I do things, and that's the standard form of entertainment? And then wouldn't the industry have to follow that?
Yeah. So can you say that another way, maybe?
If the people that are producing entertainment today, whether that be on TikTok or YouTube or whatever, and they're doing it on their phone, I mean, at a point, I feel like that's going to be a lot of content. And so this idea that we Hollywood control all content production and it has to be our way or the highway, that might just not be an option. Like, they just end up getting disrupted sort of out of the model.
That's very possible. It's very possible. I think that right now we live in a landscape where content is so diverse. There's such a huge, you know, like you said, someone can be making TikTok in their backyard in Minneapolis. And then you also have Marvel movies taking place. And so the scale of those productions, there's a huge gray area in between those. And you're right. Maybe that mom who's making the TikTok videos in Minneapolis, maybe her way of doing things is going to disrupt the Marvel universe at some point, but it's a long way from that. And I think also those types of content fulfill very different needs in us as human beings and also in the marketplace. So I think and that mom is doing it all by herself, whereas if you look at the credits of a Marvel movie, for example,
oh my God,
for
as long
people.
As the movie, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it's a continuum, right? I think it's like, you know, you can be making your put your phone up and make a TikTok video all the way to you're producing a Marvel movie. And so the production goes along a scale. But let's narrow in on what you guys do, promos and commercials. What do you think that looks like in that space?
I think it really looks like challenging what the way that we have been taught to do things and asking if it works. And so I'll give an example of what I mean by that, which is that we started to question, look, like, does the call sheet have to be boxes based on hierarchy? And the answer that we came up with was no, it doesn't. It's just the way that it's always been done. And so we redesigned our call sheet. Our call sheet, instead of the traditional way of looking, it has people's photographs in circles and it's organized by call time. So when you look at the call sheet, you see a very graphic, vibrant, several pages of the people who are going to be on set in their vibrant faces and all of that. And it's organized by call time so that you now suddenly it's not necessarily the director and the producer at the top. They may be further down because their call time is later. So that's an right. example of something that we challenged and we changed. And I think also after this, one of the things that we've been thinking about is this idea of the tech scout. So the tech scout, I don't know if you know this page, but the tech scout in commercials and promos is usually about 2 days before the shoot. Does this sound familiar?
No, go ahead. When you speak to me like I know absolutely nothing at all, and that would be correct.
No, I do not believe that. Okay. So this is one of those things also that tradition, this is just the way that we were taught that we have a calendar that progresses a certain way when we have a promo or a commercial that we do casting, we location scout, and we end up tech scouting 2 days before the shoot. That creates so much pressure on production to get everything done. And what it also does is it completely limits the amount of creativity that the crew can have on the tech scout because it's so soon before the shoot.
Right.
So we've been thinking, look, we're in a different landscape now. It's maybe we can't all get together for the tech scout in a 15-pass van with our egg sandwiches because it may not be safe. So mm-hmm. what we've been thinking about doing is saying, okay, a day or two after the job awards, we're going to have a virtual conversation with all of the keys. We're going to bring all the keys together and we're going to talk through the job. Now, because this conversation is happening several weeks before the shoot, this is an opportunity for the crew to actually contribute creative ideas to the project that might not have been possible before. And that's something that I'm very excited to try that out because I think that one of the most untapped sources of creativity in our industry is the crew. We treat them like they are just cogs in a machine there to do their plug and set up a C-stand and then go home. But those people have so much knowledge. They have so many ideas and they're so creative and nobody is asking them for their opinion. And I feel like as we can create structures that actually integrate the contribution of the crew, we're going to come up with much more creative solutions for how to execute creative. And we're also going to make the experience much more fulfilling for them because they get to bring more of themselves to the project than they get to bring now.
This just seems like makes good sense. It's shocking that this hasn't been done.
I agree.
why would you wait for 2 days ahead of time to do something you could do weeks ahead of time? That seems crazy.
Well, I think, yeah. And I think one of the reasons is because we don't think about and we don't challenge the way that we've been taught to do things. And I think in a more practical sense, for those people listening who may disagree, but really the practical reason why we don't do that is because we wait for the location to be approved so that the crew can go all in and see the location together. But I think that if doing this virtual tech scout, remixing the tech scout is what I'm calling it, and doing it earlier, there's still ways to satisfy the need of having them see what the actual location looks like by sending them emails and things like that, or videos of the location without having to do the tech scout the way that it's always been done.
How do you think, I mean, mentioning that, like the virtual tech scout, how do you think, or how have you seen technology, things like anything you could do remotely, the fact that you've had to work remotely for these past few weeks, how do you think those things will come into play to make these changes that you're talking about going forward?
I think those things are absolutely going to stick around. The whole doing things virtually in terms of even having conversations and prep, also remote filming. I think leaning more into all of that, into their, you know, Open Reel is this app where you can have talent have be filming themselves and you can control the exposure and at the focus remotely. I think that we're going to see more remote filming and that we're going to see more clients who aren't going to come to set and that they can, we can stream Video Village to them so that we can have these smaller shoots. I absolutely think that that the technological side of the automation and all of that is going to be, it's going to be more and more.
I mean, you must be you must have already seen some of that.
On set or?
Yeah, on set or just in production. Like, I mean, some of these things exist. So in the past couple of years, have you seen some of that or is that incorrect? No, we haven't seen that.
I've known that it has existed. So for sure, I've heard about productions that have streamed their Video Villages, but we've never been on a production where that was necessary. So we haven't done that on a production. I think now it's going to be necessary. There's a whole different context. So it's just going to be necessary in a new way.
You guys, again, are in Brooklyn. When you look at it, how long do you think this will be in play? Or do you think it's something that sort of now will be considered for the next several, actually even years to come?
In terms of getting back to set and when are we going to
having people be close together? Yeah. Like, do you think that people will say, you know, we can't, I don't know. I just wonder if, I guess if we get a vaccine or whatever, but I just feel like it could be quite a long time before you're like, we can have 250 people working on a set together.
I agree. I think that, you know, I'm not an epidemiologist by any means.
Me neither.
I'm a producer. So I don't want to make any claims that are going to be based in science. But I totally agree. I think that what we'll start to see is in a few months, we'll see smaller productions start to roll out, maybe in some parts of the country sooner than others. And I think they're going to have to take all safety, social distancing guidelines into consideration. And I think we're going to just have to see as a country and as a world come the fall, come the winter, what are things going to look like? Are we going to be out and then come back in and do this again, you know, in terms of being sheltering at home? Yeah. I agree. I think the one thing about that, too, is that the kinds of policies that get created in the wake of events like this tend to last a very long time. So if you think about the policies that were created after 9/11, some of those are still in existence today.
Yeah.
So I really hope that we create policies in production that are creative solutions to the existing problem of COVID, but also creative solutions to problems that existed before. So solutions that are generative and not just reactive. And I think that's really where we're looking, because I think that going back to set and everybody wearing masks and having hand sanitizer and socially distancing, for sure, that is a level of what we'll be doing on set. And that's obvious. We're really looking for what can we be doing that's different beyond that, and having that be creative.
I think that the other piece that you're talking about, which is maybe comes as a result of the pandemic, but is actually, I think, more about culture, which is this idea of not flattening the curve, but flattening the hierarchy. I think that's a very interesting point that also, and also having this ability to say, let's bring in other people. Let's bring in the cameraman. Let's bring in my friend, the gaffer, and just see what ideas they have too. I think that that would be revolutionary. And I think contribute to who knows what comes out of that if you include more people in the conversation.
I absolutely agree. And I think that the reason it hasn't been done up until now is really a systemic arrogance that has been built in, that those people don't have worthwhile ideas. And the fact is that that's completely incorrect. And that when instead of having a 24-year-old creative director at an agency come up with all these ideas about how things should be done, and then to have a 58-year-old grip just go and do what they're told, it doesn't make sense. Like, that grip has a lifetime of experience that they could bring to the table if only they're asked. That could enhance that creative idea. And that could have that grip feel like they're making a creative contribution, and that creative director can see possibilities that they may never have seen without that grip. But those are not the kinds of conversations that are happening. And I agree, the more that we can flatten the hierarchy and open ourselves to have a people first model where we're treating the crew like Beyonce, that's what we say. You know, we so often treat the client on set like they're Beyonce, and we should be treating them that way. And I also think that we should be treating the crew that way too. You know, not just getting the agency and the client Starbucks while the third electric looks longingly at their Frappuccino. Like, that's not fair. Like, that third electric deserves a Frappuccino too. Like, why can't we all have Frappuccinos?
Why can't we all have Frappuccino? This is a little bit of a change of topic, but where do you think live action ends up after this? Meaning, do you think people will spend some time being less reliant on live action just because they've sort of had to make a change during this time and they kind of stick with it going forward? Or do you think people will be very hungry to do their live action shoots so it'll come back like all in a bang?
My opinion on this may be colored by my preference, but I really think that people are going to be hungry to do live action again. Mm-hmm. And I think the scale of those shoots is going to have to be mitigated by the realities of the world that we live in. But I think that nothing replaces live action, and people are going to want to be creating new content.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, when this first started, I felt like, well, there's content for years. Who cares? But, and I mean, there is a lot of content, actually, library-wise, et cetera. But in terms of new content, like movies, for example, I was trying to find a movie to watch the other night with my husband, and I was like, there's really nothing new right now. A little bit, but not much, because they held everything back and pushed it off. So you start to see, wow, you know, you don't, it's like the writer's strike, you know, they don't produce for a couple months, and you start to really feel that impact. So, and I do think people like animation, they like different things, but I also think people like to connect with people even in their entertainment. So I do think there will be a longing for live action once this all lifts.
Absolutely. And I hope that also, you know, that saying that there's nothing to watch is also because we're talking really about Hollywood, but there's tons of independent filmmakers out there who are making movies for festivals and who are making movies on their own that haven't had a seat at the table. That haven't had an opportunity to get a distribution deal or to be exhibited in a movie theater in LA or New York or Chicago. And that my hope is that this opens up the playing field to them as well, because people are hungry for content and there is content out there. And so it's just about making those connections with those makers who may not have been on the inside before and letting them in.
You are right. And what you are doing unintentionally is shaming me, because I did not think creatively in looking for my movie, which is, that is true. I did not. One thing that I think is cool that I've seen lately, though, just for people to check out, is like South by Southwest. And I think YouTube's doing this, and Amazon, they're doing these online film festivals. So that's a kind of thing where I think that's cool. That's interesting. And it would, in terms of the democratization of the industry, like, for example, I can't go to the Cannes Film Festival. I would love to. And not that I expect them to put that all online, but if you had a taste of that online, I think people would be into that.
Absolutely. And if those films are now eligible for big awards without having to be exhibited in theaters, that changes things too. You know, it's a real game changer that's happening right now.
And that, I mean, that goes back again to the democratization, meaning the hands of the few that want to hold that dear, it's just like, I don't know, Spotify or Netflix or anything that's been a huge disruptor finally comes along and says, nope, this has to be more open. This has to be more inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Any other ways in which you think the agency, well, not really the agency business for you, the production business and then specifically live action production will change, will be revolutionized in light of the current state of the world?
I think on the content side, I'm really become aware of what for me is piercing through the noise. When I look on my phone or when I look at, you know, advertisers or networks who are creating campaigns, what pierces through to me? And I feel like what's piercing through are really things that are clever and that are talent led mm-hmm. and that are simple and often interactive. So I think about, you know, I love Freeform's Stay the F Home campaign, right? There's something so simple and so funny and clever about that.
It's Stay the FF Home, just so people know.
Right.
Anyway.
Yes, exactly. And I also think back to that was like 10 years ago. Wyden and Kennedy, I think, did that Old Spice Twitter spot with the, it was amazing. It was that guy who was the Old Spice guy. And he was reading off of a teleprompter. He was responding live to people's tweets. And it was a huge success, that campaign. And I think back to stuff like that, where it's so simple, it's so clever, it's really based on the performance of that actor, and it's interactive. And I think that those are the kinds of things that hopefully we'll be seeing more of, and that those are the kinds of things that people are going to be hungry for after this.
All right. So this is kind of a positive spin on the result of this time is innovation, democratization, more content, maybe creativity. So those are some silver linings, I think, that we can take away.
Flattening the hierarchy in addition to the curve. I love that one.
Flatten the hierarchy, hashtag.
All right. You heard it here first.
Yeah, you heard it here first. All right, I'm going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It was wonderful to have you, Becky.
Thank you so much for having me, Paige. And thank you, everyone, who's been listening. Stay safe out there.
And flatten the hierarchy. Okay, bye.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief Podcast. If you don't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have comments, questions, or ideas for conversations, please feel free to reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org. And as always, thanks for listening.